of the arts here, not only in Portland in the Northwest, I thought it was time to step up and do something about that. And had greatly admired the SICA awards that are presented by the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art in San Francisco every 2 years to feature emerging and under-recognized professional artists in the Bay Area. Go ahead, Julie.
In the Bay Area.
In the Bay Area in San Francisco.
It's a small area.
It's
fairly large,
pretty
isn't
dense.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very vital place and the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art recognized the need to honor and respect the artists of that place.
It's a wonderful museum.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the SICA Awards have been hugely successful in launching the careers of numerous artists over time into more national, the greater national dialogue. And I wanted to create an opportunity for that to happen here in the Northwest for the amazing artists that are choosing to live and work here in this corner of the country. I think collectively this step towards featuring the artists of the Northwest in general in conjunction with, say, the Betty Bowen Award presented by the Seattle Art Museum, certainly the NETI Awards that are administered by the Tacoma Art Museum, the Northwest Biennial, also presented by the Tacoma Art Museum, and a few of other professional recognition opportunities. Collectively, I think it makes for a really vital time for artists that are choosing to live here. Institutions are recognizing their efforts and putting forward an opportunity to view their work, to support their work financially, and I think it's a wonderful time.
How many people are recognized in this show? How many people work is shown?
Well, currently the exhibition is composed of work by the five finalists. But it took a while to get to those
five. And how many subscribed?
Sure. Let me tell you about that process.
I don't know the proper words for what
I'll tell
presented.
You. I'll tell you. As you may remember, because we reached out to you as well, Julie, the beginning of this started a year or so ago, actually a year and a few months ago. We invited arts professionals from the community to nominate artists that they felt were deserving of greater attention at this point in their career based on the quality of their work, the innovation that they exhibit in their work, the continuity of vision and their relevance to both community and global issues in contemporary art. And we solicited nominations from curators, academics, gallerists, artists, critics, collectors, a great variety of professionals in the arts here in the greater Northwest. And we received 259 nominations for this new awards program, which was quite remarkable. And we had an amazing, I have to mention this, we had an amazing woman, a volunteer named Candace Opper, who helped me through this process.
What was her name?
Candace Opper.
Opper.
O-P-P-E-R. Yes.
O-P-P-E-R.
She's amazing. I could not have done it without her. I don't have an assistant. And so there was huge mountain of paperwork, and she managed it all so beautifully. She was incredible. So thank you, Candace, if you're out there. But back to the issue at hand. So we had these amazing nominations, 259, and we invited James Rondeau from the Art Institute in Chicago, the chair of the art department and curator there, to come and review the materials of these 259 artists with me. And over the course of three very intense days, long days, we narrowed the group down to a set of finalists, and there are 28 finalists who are deserving of great accolades as well. It's a really strong group, and I'd love to just read the names off so that the community can get a better understanding.
We need to read all the names.
So in addition to the five artists that we'll talk about in a moment, 23 additional artists were selected as finalists. They are Gretchen Bennett from Seattle, Joshua Berger from Portland. He runs Plasma Magazine. You might know him. Mm-hmm. Buddy Bunting from Seattle, Judy Cook from Portland, Claire Cowie from Seattle, Mark Dombrowski from Tacoma. And I should note that maybe we can talk about this in a minute. He is the subject of the next Apex exhibition, which opens this Saturday at the Portland Art Museum, the work by Mark Dombrowski, who was one of the finalists.
Yes.
Ellen Garvins from Portland. Yes. Mm-hmm. Julie's smiling. Jesse Hayward, also from Portland. Mary Henry from Washington. Faye Jones, Seattle. Michael Knudsen from Reed. Yes. Mm-hmm. Here in Portland. James Labrador. Margie Livingston, Seattle artist. E. May from Salem. Seth Neal, a really wonderful artist from who lives here in Portland now, who I was familiar with prior to moving here. When he was living elsewhere, I did an exhibition that included some of his work. Richard Notkin from Montana, mm-hmm. Gerald Dean Andrzejczyk, Joseph Park, Akio Takamori, Storm Tharp, mm-hmm. and Oscar Tuazon, Laura Vandenberg, and Robert Yoder were the additional 23 finalists. So from there, I did
a great bunch.
Isn't it remarkable?
Very interesting bunch.
It is,
because there's such variety in personalities and approach to the work
right,
that they do.
Different levels in their career.
Yeah, but colorful.
Mm-hmm. A lot of painters. You know, it was interesting. This final group is an interesting reflection of the combination of both James Rondeau and myself sitting in that room. I was surprised to find that James was far more conservative in his approach to the work he was responding to than I expected him to be.
Yeah.
He was, and now that I think about it, I guess I was...
And this is James who?
Rondeau from the Art Institute in Chicago.
Okay.
He loves painting. He loves painting. And I think this list certainly illustrates that. We both agreed that we had to agree on particular artists. And there were some that I really was excited about that were using new media in interesting ways. And there were some that he was certainly excited about that, you know, didn't make the list either. But as a whole, he was very pleased by the work that he saw here. And I'm digressing. But anyway, back
That's
to...
Okay.
These 28 finalists.
What important people's opinions were.
Yes, yes. He was fantastic. I have to tell you that he was very sensitive to, even though he's well seasoned in sort of global issues and travels a great deal around the world looking at art, he also is highly sensitive to regional issues and to sort of seasoned artists here in our place, and very respectful. And mm-hmm. I admired him greatly for that. He's someone of kind of from my own camp.
Yeah.
But
good.
The 28 artists, I did a studio visits with them over the course of last summer, extensive studio visits. And from those 28, I selected the five artists who are currently on view in the exhibition to answer your question. And they are all finalists, so they receive an award, an honorarium, micro exhibition, I like to say, within the special exhibition galleries, although there are a number of pieces, so it's their exhibitions for each are not so small, as well as museum programming, and they're featured in the catalog mm-hmm. that accompanies the exhibition as well.
Okay. Now, when you go around to an artist's studio, you have to go to the studio, don't you?
Yes.
And look at the work.
Of course.
Are you looking then at the work that the artist wants to put in the show, or are you looking at pictures of the work, or what?
That's a good question.
Is it different in every single place?
Just like artists, it's different in everywhere you go. In some cases, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to note that during the process, I queried artists about what they were thinking, what they were dreaming about doing. You know, what are your dreams? What do you, if you could just do anything, what would it be? And a number of the artists that are currently in the exhibition manifested those dreams for this exhibition, and I'm really quite thrilled. Most of the artists, in fact, all of them, created new work specifically for this exhibition, in some cases entirely new work, though I have to mention that was not necessary. I was happy to pull from existing collections or existing work, but it was their wish and their desire, and I was happy to help make that come
I
true.
I understand that.
Yeah.
They wanted something brand new for the place.
Yes. Yeah, so, for example, yeah. Marie Watt created a very ambitious installation in
such
the Schnitzer
Sculpture Court. Such a
beautiful show
of work. And Marie Watt. And she's such a lovely person.
She's very special.
She's just a really wonderful, sensitive, caring woman. Just genuine.
Very genuine.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And I think it's pretty incredible that to see an artist that we think we know so well continue to evolve. And we have an example of that there at the museum now, where we, those of you who might be familiar with her work, she's most well known for her work with wool blankets and yes. as a metaphor for so many things in life. And typically they are, in the recent years, have been stacked blankets or representations of blankets in various materials such as bronze or wood, if not blankets themselves, or hung from the wall like a quilt. However, for this exhibition, I included an earlier piece to serve as a springboard, so to speak, for the newer work. And mm-hmm. she's created two large-scale site-specific installations that are three-dimensional, and they are quite touching works. They were inspired by Marie's sort of familial and motherly sense, in that she was reflecting on several things at the same time, and the work coalesced into what I'll talk about here in a minute. But she was considering, what's an heirloom? What do we deem worthy of passing on to future generations? Mm-hmm. At the same time, she was thinking about the loss in Iraq, and she was curious to know about the various Oregonian soldiers who had passed away in Iraq, and went to the library and was surprised to not find a file folder that had clippings on all the individual soldiers. And mm-hmm. with that in mind, she felt the need to archive them herself. And so she researched all of the soldiers that have fallen in Iraq and decided to create a memorial of sorts to them, and also an installation that reflects on this sort of idea that we are all connected in yes. this world. And so she created woolen cameos of each soldier with their name and a document that accompanies the installation that tells you a little bit about their lives. Mm-hmm. And with those soldiers, she chose to pair them with an equal number of women or mothers that have had a great impact on men that Marie has known. And they have since passed away as well. So the piece as a whole is entitled Forget Me Not, Mothers and Sons. It's a beautiful work that is quite ambitious, and you'll have to see that for yourself, or maybe you can describe it, Julie.
So mm-hmm. it takes all of the Sculpture Court.
Yes.
And it your eyes are going around, and they keep going up because there's flowers in the stuffed into the floor
yes.
upstairs and hanging out a little bit, big bouquets of flowers.
There's flowers,
and they're all
yeah.
and they're all at wool.
Woolen flowers, yes.
Yes, she's a Native American person.
She's part
isn't
Native
she?
American, part Seneca, and part German Scottish. She likes to call herself half cowboy, half Indian.
Yeah.
Her father was a rancher, and her mother was a Seneca.
I understand that some of the huge things, projects that she has. That she uses neighborhood people.
Yes, the
people
flower
passing
piece,
by.
Yeah, the flower piece you're referenced to is the second work called Forget Me Not Blossom. And it was created around the subject of all of the innocent people who have passed away in Iraq during the war, the innocent civilians who have died violent deaths.
Mm-hmm.
There's a body count, Iraq body count online that she references to access those numbers. And each blossom was hand-stitched as a community effort. It's a community project in collaboration with the museum and the artist. And you have an opportunity, all of you out there, to come and stitch woolen blossoms at the institution anytime you'd like, or you just drop in the education department. But there are specific sewing circle times. And Julie, you're referencing to this sewing circle practice that Marie has, which has been a major part of her work for many years. And she invites strangers and friends alike to come and work on a specific project and help her in the stitching of the work. And the cameos were done as sewing circle projects with both her studio assistants and members of the community. She'd set up very, very specific sewing circle times. She loves the individuality of the stitch. She never pulls a stitch, and she loves the diversity of the stitchery. And when you go in, you'll notice that there are a great range of stitching expertise. That's not quite the word. I'm losing my train of thought. I'm also losing my voice. But sorry. Anyway, it's okay. The forget-me-not blossom piece is really quite remarkable and thoughtful, and it incorporates a stone basalt vertical basalt column, and that column is surrounded by blankets that are on the floor, and they look like a topography or a landscape of sorts. There's seven green army blankets that reference the seven generations that are this notion of seven generations that's shared by Indigenous people, meaning that the actions and thoughts we have today, or the course of our lives, is dictated by what occurred seven generations ago, and in turn, our lives will affect, and the actions and decisions we make today will affect the people seven generations to come. And so, this is something that percolates often through Marie's work. So we have the seven generations below the basalt column, and then on that column are these blossoms, sort of sprouting from the stone, and then a woolen ladder that uses the space beautifully. It comes from the floor up the side of the column and then drapes very gradually up to the skylights.
It's very graceful.
It's very graceful. And
warm-hearted. I just think she's a gift to the world, really. And I was so pleased to see that she had been selected as the artist from Oregon.
Yes, but I'd like to call your attention to something specifically, if I may. Dan Atto, the artist from Washougal, Washington, considers himself a Portland artist, more or less.
Oh, yes.
Washougal is just over the river.
On. Well, let's talk about Atto's work. Can we cover that?
Of course.
Because it has a controversial element.
Do you want to talk about that?
Nobody has objected to it. No, I think that's important.
What is
and
that
a
controversial?
Surprise.
Yeah.
And it's terribly funny. Describe his work.
His work is, just to finish my thought about Dan, he lives in Washougal, which is just 20 minutes away from Portland, and he considers himself, this is his city, and he'd like to move here, and he works at PSU, and this is the place that he associates with mostly. So, he is in the Portland metro area.
Okay.
So keep that in mind. But Dan's work is quite, like all these artists, he works across, he works with multiple media. He's a painter, he's a sculptor, he has been working with neon lately, and he begins each day with a daily drawing practice. He sits down, he crafts one or two highly realized compositions and related cartoons or thoughtful one-liners or phrases, and over time, they begin to populate a single sheet of paper. So there'll be perhaps a month's worth of drawings on one single sheet. Those drawings and thoughts then potentially inspire a series of small paintings or larger paintings or neon works. And we have examples of those in the exhibition, both the drawings, the small paintings, and one neon work. He was raised as the son of a forest ranger, and so he lived in northern Idaho, Washington, and Minnesota, and is greatly inspired by his rural American upbringing and the beauty of the Northwest. Many recognizable landmarks can be found in his work. Many people have compared them to the Hudson River School, and he's highly mm-hmm. trained in the history of painting, and that comes out in the work.
I didn't see the Hudson River yeah. School.
That's a parallel that's often
it's
made.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But it's very poignant, very self-referential, very humorous. The scenes that they're narrative works, figurative narrative works, that illustrate interiors of bars or antics in the woods. Mm-hmm. And some of them are somewhat controversial, as you say. I don't yes. find them controversial myself, but in that they are risque. He's inspired by strip clubs. And
they're very humorous.
Yeah. And
it's a light touch.
It's a light touch. And at the same time, very thoughtful.
Yes.
He was
and true.
And
so
true. Yeah. He has studied Kierkegaard for quite some time. And so there are these very thoughtful one-liners that he then paints in small letters across the surface of the painting to sort of open them up.
I have to get awfully mm-hmm. close to that, the writing, because it's so fragile. And it's very tiny, but it has a punch.
It does.
I saw a lot of people, you would have to tell, please get your nose away from the yeah. paintings. Yeah. Don't put your noses in the paintings.
It's a very intimate experience.
Yes, and there are others that are intimate in the same way. And we're not going to be able to. I see that Emily is raising her hand.
That's
we
not
have 4 minutes.
It can't
That's
be.
A long time.
That's okay.
Yes.
Well, we haven't talked about Jeffrey Mitchell from Seattle, or
no.
Kat Clifford from Seattle, or
the
recipient.
The winner.
No, there aren't. See, there are no winners, Julie. I keep telling people that they're all winners. Because
yes,
winners
right.
implies losers, and that doesn't ring true for me. So the recipient of the Arlene Schnitzer Prize, yes, is Whiting Tennis from Seattle, who is a painter and a sculptor as well. He is a wonderful gentleman. I think did you have the opportunity to meet him? I can't recall. But the Arlene Schnitzer Prize is this
He's
prestigious
very tall,
prize. Is very tall. Yes.
And very quiet, a
yes.
kind of a quiet person,
very
isn't
thoughtful,
he?
Very quiet and very thoughtful.
Tall and rangy.
Yeah, yeah. And his work is very quiet as well. His paintings yeah. that are and sculptures that are inspired most recently by what he calls the secret language of things, in that he's fascinated by inanimate objects and their ability to maybe to vibrate with a life force. And so he has recently been creating works that are figurative in scope, sculptural mm-hmm. elements based on architectural tropes and there's so much to say.
They're characters in there, and they're not human characters, but they're put together.
They're personifications of human qualities
That's
in various
right.
ways.
They have a human
yeah.
quality, mm-hmm. and the whole thing is the color of Oregon in that it's washed out.
Very Northwest palette, grays
yes,
and blues.
Yes, and textures.
Mm-hmm. And the materials,
textures
too.
Textures and materials.
Yeah. Did you notice that large painting, which is 14 feet long, is also a collage? All of that
yes.
patterning, the rocks, the grass, it's the images of the backyard of a split-level ranch in Whiting's neighborhood in Seattle, and the backyard is filled with debris and junk that seems to migrate to the base of the house.
I got very excited about yeah. that, because he has little strips of red in
yeah.
a few places
right.
that brings that section together.
Yes,
kind of, and the arrangement and quality of that one piece is full of pieces, but it's so darned Oregon backwoods kind of.
It's a very incredible work. And
Emily is waving both hands. And let's talk until she. Are we signing
are
off?
Are we signing off? Well,
yeah.
Julie,
yes.
Thank you. And there's so much more to say.
I know there's more
there
to say.
Programs,
you'll have to come again.
Yes, I will. And go to our website, www.pbs.org. pam.org to find out the schedule of programs with each artist. They'll be doing either film screenings or talks in the gallery, and I encourage you to come and learn more about them.
Thank you, Jennifer Gately from the Portland Art Museum, talking about the Northwest art that's there now. And go and see it. Everybody is welcome. And this is Julie Bernard and Art Focus. And thank you, Jennifer. And thank you, Emily.
And you're welcome, Julie. And thank you for Art Focus once again. That was Jennifer Gately from the Portland Art Museum talking about Contemporary Northwest Art Awards. Coming up next, Democracy Now! This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Susan Matlack and Jones and Associates, specialists in not-for-profit accounting since 1986. Information at www.smjones.com or by phone at 503-242-9360.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
19 years later, the oil is still present, the fisheries are still damaged, and the economy remains depressed. Exxon's quest to escape responsibility and punishment speaks volumes about the company's corporate policies and its lack of commitment to the protection of our nation's waters.
In a major victory for corporate America, the Supreme Court cuts the amount of money ExxonMobil has to pay Alaskans harmed by the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill. Exxon now has to pay one-tenth of the original $5 billion fine. Then to Zimbabwe.
Any election conducted arrogantly, unilaterally on Friday, will not be recognized by the MDC.